Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
It's already a given that you're going to have active players. It's just a matter of how many years into the league do they need to be before you consider it to be sufficient to put them, you know, on that list. So
that's why, you know, that was a difficult thing for you to balance with Austin Reeves, for example. And
78. It was 78.
Oh, boy. He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, who shows this?
Welcome, everybody, to the Anthony Irwin Show. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined today by now friend of the show, friend of the feed, multiple appearances at this point, Howard Beck of Sports Illustrated, senior editor of Sports Illustrated. He is the co-host of the Crossover podcast, which runs Tuesdays and Fridays. Latest episode, Talking Mavs with Tim Cato. How are you doing? How's this season treating you? What a wild year so far.
Doing well so far. Good to see you. Glad to be a friend of the show and multiple time appearance now. How many do I need to get the stamps on my little card for the free latte? Is that at five? Because I think we're at three. I must be getting close.
I think I can actually expense that now at this current gig. So we'll set it at three. We'll go right, next appearance. You'll get free a free latte. Yeah.
Awesome.
Especially if you're in Austin, if you're in the greater Austin area, you can get a beer, like whatever you prefer.
Been way too long since I've been in Austin or the nearby city that I believe hosts an NBA franchise. So
there's two cities.
How far? So I've driven San Antonio to Austin, which took me, I think, 45, 50, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm 20, 30 minutes north of Austin. So for if I leave right now, I would get to San Antonio in an hour and a half, 2 hours, depending on traffic. And then it's 2-3-ish hours to Dallas. So I've made both drives, and the Dallas one is much nicer than the San Antonio one.
My recollection of Austin to San Antonio and back, because the listeners really want to hear about traffic patterns in Texas, was that there was always construction going on whatever that highway
always
was.
Perpetually. Yeah. It just never stops.
A long, boring drive, but worth it to get to Austin because there was great food and great music, and it's a cool town. And I feel like I have not spent enough time there. So one of these
not
days.
As worth it to go to San Antonio.
Ooh, shots fired.
Today's show, we have a ton to talk about. We have just this wild season in general, what you think about the Lakers and where they currently stand, other surprises around the league, which there are plenty of. And I wanted to start here. So you made a little bit of news, a little bit of controversy in regards to the top 75 list with Dwight Howard. And I'm curious, is it self-hate because he also has Howard in his name? Is it just just general contempt for people named Dwight because of Dwight Schrute from The Office? What's going on there?
These are great theories. I love this, especially the self-hate one. I do have some self-loathing issues. There's no question.
I think we all do. Yeah.
not that many Howards in NBA history, first or last name. So yeah. I really should be looking out for my fellow Howard. Funny story, when my daughter was small and would come through while I'm the living room while I'm watching NBA games, and I have to think it's because of the commonality of Dwight Howard and my first name being Howard that she somehow latched onto him as a player. This is when he was still obviously in his prime, so there was reason for me to be watching Magic games and so forth.
Yeah.
And she would ask, is Dwight Howard in this game? No matter what game was on, she'd want to know. And I think it was the first like NBA name I think she knew. And I think it had to be because of that.
Did you break her heart when you told her you left him out of the top 75?
We have not discussed that. It's too sensitive. I think it's too raw. maybe when she's voting age.
Yeah.
So the Dwight Howard thing was and is a difficult area to debate, to discuss, because people are really dug in on this, and there is certainly a subset of NBA analysts, fans, pundits, whatever, who are absolutely positive that Dwight Howard should have made it, deserved it, that this is the disgrace among all disgraces. First of all, so just to note for the record for your listeners, I was one of the voters, but I was one of 88. So there are 87 others who I don't. And listen, we'll never know. I don't think we'll ever know. The NBA will probably never disclose how this all broke down. I disclosed my entire ballot in a column that I put on SI.com a week ago, coinciding with the day that the day after the full list had been announced. So I have no qualms whatsoever, you know, explaining some of my thought process, which I've already done online. But I don't know what the rationale for others were on Dwight and why he was not on a sufficient number of ballots, or how many he was left off of. Has he been hurt by the latter half of his career? And it's not just latter stages. Like, a lot of guys will fade out. But his fade began when he was like 29, 30.
I would argue it maybe started in Orlando.
It maybe started in Orlando. Yeah.
Like, in terms of like the beginnings of the admonishment of Howard off of the court because of the way he handled his exit there.
And I don't know whether, you know, the optics of Dwight Howard, the attitude, the persona, the hijinks, or as my buddy Chris Mannix said when we were doing a video on this for SI, he said, you know, is it just because he's a doofus? And then I picked up from there. I said, is he paying a doofus tax?
Doofus tax.
just kind of came out spontaneously. Yeah. It's possible, but I don't know. I cannot speak to the mindset of the 87 other voters.
Yeah.
I did not weigh. I will be absolutely honest. I did not weigh whatever you want to call it, the doofus tax or the aspects of his personality as a huge weight. It was not a massive part of my consideration. What I did was, you know, so people grandfathered in a lot of the original 50. I kept 49 of the 50. We can talk about that if you want. I left out Lenny Wilkins. I replaced him with Dominique Wilkins. So in some respects, I was still kind of containing that 50 to the first 50 years. Dominique got snubbed in 1996. I thought Lenny Wilkins was an overreach. I didn't understand his inclusion as I examined all this. I left out Lenny Wilkins, replaced him with Dominique Wilkins. And then what I did, what it looks like a lot of the voters did, which was try to get 25 guys out of the 25 years since, though that included some guys who were active at that time, but just didn't make it at the time because their careers were not complete. Talking about Gary Payton, Jason Kidd, and some others of that era. So I compiled my list of guys that I absolutely should consider. And it was of the post 96, right? And it was probably, I don't actually remember now. It was like, you know, because we submitted these ballots like 2 months ago. I think it was like 35, 40 players or something to get down to 25. Guys like Vince Carter were on that list. I did not vote for Vince. Guys like Tracy McGrady, Grant Hill, neither of them made it either. But I started like grouping my considerations by theme a little bit, kind of, you know, like Carter, McGrady kind of went together in a way. And then I had this grouping: Dwight Howard, Ben Wallace, Dikembe Mutombo, Draymond Green. Let's leave Draymond out for a moment because his career's still going. And well,
that's also, if I could just really quickly, like,
sure, yeah,
the entire exercise is almost impossible because you're ranking guys whose careers aren't done yet, you know, like
there's that part too. Yes.
So I read your reasoning and in listening to it now, the one kind of olive branch I was willing to offer was like Dwight's story is pretty much written at this point. And if you're including Anthony Davis and if you're including Damian Lillard, they still have a couple more chapters to go. So maybe by the time that their career is over, if you're looking back at the top 75, you know, 5-6 years from now, you're looking at it and you're saying, oh, of course AD would be on there. Of course Damian Lillard would be on there. But that's not necessarily how it worked.
It's so let me put that one to the side for a second, because it is an important point to talk about, you know, Damian and Anthony Davis, and why I decided to include them, though their careers are not anywhere near done yet. Let me get back to the centers for just a minute here, because people, what they've done is they've said, well, Dwight should make it because eight-time All-Star, eight-time All-NBA, three-time Defensive Player of the Year, five-time All-Defensive Team. It's stellar resume. And yes,
MVP runner-up.
Yes, an MVP runner-up, and I think was in the MVP high in the balloting, like 4 out of a 5-year stretch or whatever. Mm-hmm. All those things are important. And comparing resumes, comparing postseason awards, comparing various honors, rankings on all-time scoring, all-time rebounds, all-time blocks, all these, like all of these things are worth discussing. So is the rings count, even though I'm not a rings guy in general, but we're talking about an all-time 75 list. Like, there's a reason Bill Russell is like an automatic, right? Because the dude won more than anybody. And as I wrote in the column, like comparing guys across the eras is impossible.
Yeah.
As I also wrote, and I should note this too, before I get back to the Dwight, Ben Wallace, Dikembe thing, is just that the list is called the 75th anniversary list. Somewhere in there, the NBA might've described it as the 75 greatest or whatever, but it's called the 75th anniversary list. And when you even looking at the 50, which I did take into heavy consideration, it was clear that a lot of guys were included, not entirely based on number of awards won or number of points scored, number of rebounds. It was their place in history. It was the importance that they had to the history of the NBA, to the story of the NBA, to the building blocks of the NBA. And when you take those things into consideration, some guys who may not have had the greatest individual resume or the greatest overall skill set still have some weight, and it's hard to dismiss those things. Yeah. If I had knocked out a bunch of guys from the 50s and 60s, which I seriously considered doing early on in this process, Dwight would have been automatic at that stage. It's only because it was a squeeze for the modern era and trying to balance this and trying not to overweight the modern era. And then you have to start making hard cuts. So here's the way it starts to break down for me. Let's focus on two specific things, because Dwight, while he did have a few seasons, scoring 20 plus points a game, he wasn't really a scorer, right? He wasn't that kind of star. His renown is for his defensive dominance during his prime, a prime that was too short, by the way. During that time, he does win three Defensive Player of the Year awards and 5 All-Defensive nods. Mm-hmm. Ben Wallace had 4 Defensive Player of the Year awards. That's one more. And 6 All-Defensive. That's also one more than Dwight. Dikembe Mutombo had 4 Defensive Player of the Year also, and 6 All-Defensive also. So both Ben Wallace and Dikembe Mutombo, you know, defensive specialists at center. Dwight does score more than them. Granted, Dwight was not a scorer for the most part for most of his career. I don't think that was his calling card.
Yeah.
But he was a better scorer than these other two guys I'm mentioning. But I mentioned those two because if we're going to start counting awards on those counts, on the defensive metrics, they were as good or better for a longer period of time. And in Ben Wallace's case, helped the Pistons win a championship against, as you know, a stacked Laker team in 2004. And Ben Wallace wasn't some role player. He was critical to that championship.
Yeah, he did that series was bananas. What he did in that, like defensively, was insane.
One of the, I was saying least talented.
Kobe also played great defense in that series against the Lakers. He was just, you know.
Yes. I mean, the Pistons, period. Like the Ben Wallace and Rasheed Wallace, everybody. Oh, Kobe was. Yeah, you're making a Kobe joke. Sorry. Kobe also did play great defense against Shaq by not ever giving him the ball. Ben Wallace was part of one of the most unique champions we've seen. One of the biggest David knocking out Goliath, maybe the only one in recent NBA history in the finals, right? I mean, if you want to say Dallas over Miami, maybe. I don't know.
Cavs over Warriors, maybe.
But yeah, asterisks, circumstances, not asterisks, circumstances. Also, by the way, they had LeBron freaking James. So there's no, you cannot be David if you have LeBron James on your team. No, sorry. Anthony, no.
73-win Warriors team.
Ben Wallace goes to 2 finals as a critical piece of those finals teams and wins a championship. Dikembe Mutombo played it in the most glamorous era for centers that we have ever seen. Dikembe Mutombo's peer group was Hakeem Olajuwon, Patrick Ewing, David Robinson, Shaquille O'Neal, Alonzo Mourning. you can't compare eras, but Dwight Howard would not have been dominant in that era. He would not. Dikembe was a defensive force at a time when bigs still ruled the NBA. And is an all-timer. And, you know, when we talk about the complete package of a player and what they brought to the league and what they meant to the league, Dikembe as a humanitarian, as a global ambassador, and everything else he's done. I mean, I heard Ernie Johnson on TNT invoke all of that in talking about why he wished Dikembe would have made it. I don't know if he was actually on his ballot or not. But I mean, those things aren't the most critical, but when you're considering a 75th anniversary team and it's not just about
you're
the
splitting
75
hairs.
Yes. And it's not just about the 75 best ever to play. Mm-hmm. If that were the case, we would be knocking out Dolph Schayes and Paul Arizin and a bunch of guys from, you know, the early eras. So if Dikembe and Ben Wallace, if I can't get them on, is Dwight really so far ahead of those guys for his era that he should have been on? Some people will say, absolutely, yes, Howard, you're an idiot. That's fine. I couldn't quite make the leap there. But I did put on Anthony Davis and Damian Lillard. Chris Mannix, when we were debating this for SI, says, you know, Dwight was better at 28 than Anthony Davis at 28. Well, guess what? Anthony Davis was the second best player, the second star on a team that won a championship just a year ago. Yeah. Dwight Howard at 28 was not. Is that rings culture now? I don't know. But Anthony Davis, yes, struggled in New Orleans to lead his team anywhere. A horrendous franchise doing terrible things with that roster for most of his career. Mm-hmm. Everybody, almost everybody needs another star with them to win a championship. But when he had that opportunity, Anthony Davis was incredible. Your audience doesn't need me to describe or remind them how great Anthony Davis is or was, or how critical he was to that championship. Damian Lillard's a transformational, evolutionary kind of player. And you could say, well, Steph Curry is already that. And yes, Steph Curry is already on the ballot too. It doesn't negate that Dame Lillard is also part of this massive leap forward in NBA play, where you're shooting from the logo, where you're taking routinely pulling up from 35 feet. And one of the great scorers and shooters that we've seen, one of the great clutch players we've ever seen. I mean, you know, the catalog of Damian Lillard clutch shots, you know, matches almost anybody's in NBA history. You want to put him up there with Jerry West in the Mr. Clutch, club, it would be fair. So I thought for two guys whose careers are already ongoing, and then you think about Shaq being on it with only 4 years on his resume in 96, Lillard and Anthony Davis are way deeper into their careers than Shaq was at that time. Mm-hmm. I had no problem deciding that I felt those guys needed to be there. We already had other active players anyway, right? Durant was automatic. Curry was automatic. Westbrook, I thought, was automatic. Chris Paul, though closer to the end than some of the other guys, was automatic. So it's already a given that you're going to have active players. It's just a matter of how many years into the league do they need to be before you consider it to be sufficient to put them, you know, on that list. So
that's why, you know, that was a difficult thing for you to balance with Austin Reeves, for example. And
78th. He was 78th. If we're talking about snubs, speaking of 77, because the joke they had in the Warriors locker room, like Klay Thompson, who was on my ballot and I considered a lock, I'm stunned he got left out. He's arguably the second greatest shooter of all time next to his teammate. And critical part of three championships and a team that made five straight finals, which no team had done since the 60s Celtics. Going to five straight finals is like incredibly difficult. And yes, they had the injection of Durant for some of that, but Klay Thompson is a fantastic player and a two-way player. Frankly, he's better than Reggie Miller, who everybody just takes as a given that Reggie should be on there. He is every bit the shooter or better than Reggie. Plus he plays defense. And I think does more with the ball in his hands.
This is kind of part of a larger general point. I hope Klay Thompson changes his number to 77. But like I didn't vote in any of this, and I wasn't a part of the process. And the thing that I keep falling back on, if I was, is in terms of competition, some of the names that are on the list from the first 50. Played in eras that weren't nearly as competitive as the last 25 years have been. And so like, if I was weighing, and obviously like there's recency bias, there is all kinds of biases present because I have watched the last 20, you know, well, not the last 25 years, but but I've watched like the last 15 years and paid close attention to the last 15 years of basketball. And I would say that like I would have taken more people off of the top 50 just because the last, you know, as the sport has evolved, it has become more competitive. And I think you have to represent where the league is now if the point of adding 25 people is refreshing the list anyway. But it, honestly, like the thing existed, and you talked about kind of the ambiguous grading system that like the league basically, I would imagine, didn't tell you, hey, this is how you have to rate this. This is how you have to rate off-court stuff. Nothing. This is how you have to. So nothing. I would imagine, yeah.
Zero. And no guidance whatsoever.
That exists that way because the whole point of the list is to generate conversation, which it has for the last 20 minutes between you and me. Like that's the whole point of this thing.
And for the last week and for years to come, probably.
Yeah.
Which is fine also. Look, you know, if you had taken, and this is the other thing, because people will say like, oh, well, Anthony Davis and Damian Lillard made it just because the league wanted current players to make it more relevant to the. The league had nothing to do with it. They like sent out ballots to a bunch of us, mm-hmm. and then we all filled them out in our individual, you know, homes and offices or wherever. I mean, I didn't even know who most of the other voters were. I found out by accident along the way when other people mentioned it. I conferred with one or two of them at times, just saying, hey, I'm thinking about this. What do you think of this? How do we? No. But like, it's not 88 people sitting in a room.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's got a gavel.
This. Yeah.
Debating, and we've got to decide.
Who would be holding the gavel? Who
would be holding? Bill Russell. I mean,
well, that's not fair. He can't participate in the thing that he wouldn't be in. But I guess that would be technically more fair. Right.
Wasn't he one of the voters, actually?
That would be insane.
I'd like to think the ghost like of David Stern is holding the gavel and possibly hitting me on the head with it.
At some point in that comment, he has multiple gavels to throw at people. He has a whole bunch of them up at his little box, up on his judge chair that he's sitting on. And he's throwing a little hammer at all kinds of people.
No question, and would probably never miss.
yeah,
I'm now pulling open the press release because I'm trying to refresh my memory of who else was on this this list of voters. It was not a
it's not objective. It's subjective.
And it's also not everybody in a room where you could actually benefit from. Listen, if I wanted to push back against some of the older guys and say, listen, I want to knock some of these guys out, but now mm-hmm. I've got all of the some of the people who played against them are actually in the room, and some of the people who covered them perhaps are in the room, and right. they say, no, you got to keep them because of this. And then mm-hmm. you can have that discussion. And then I could say, yeah, but look at the way the game is played now and look at how skilled these guys are. Whatever. You can have this debate. It's really hard to debate across the eras. It's even harder still when we are all prisoners to an extent of our own era, of our own generation. And as I wrote, here I am, a kid who grew up in the 80s, 70s and 80s, but I didn't really want to bring in how old I was. Growing up in the 80s, making judgments on guys from the 50s and 60s while covering the league in the 2020s, right? Like and comparing to guys, like it's a really difficult thing to do for any of us. And so I would almost have preferred 88 of us in a room together, somebody with a gavel and a big dry erase board and charts and graphics everywhere while we're trying to hammer it out. That would have been... In some ways, a more
just televise it.
That would be incredible.
I would watch the crap out of that if that was something that I could potentially watch. No, I saw that you were getting quite a bit of vitriol for leaving Dwight off, and you know, personally, I would have put him ahead of Dame, probably ahead of AD too. But like, it's not something I'm going to sit here and. How dare the you just got to take that up with your daughter. Like it's not well, it's not me that you have to
let me just make one final point on it, because I know you want to talk about some other stuff, but mm-hmm. You know, I think when we're judging the totality of a player's career, it's fair to say this guy's prime ended way too soon. And not because of injury per se. I know there was the back stuff and some other things, especially, you know, in that time when he went from Orlando to LA and in his year in LA. But you know, and McGrady, you know, is one who, and Yao Ming is another one who, if not for injuries, might have had a very different career. Mm-hmm. I think if people want to dismiss the back half of Dwight's career, you're being too dismissive on that count. If you think that it got overemphasized, fair. Mm-hmm. Maybe. I would say don't dismiss it either, though. It matters that he bounced from between five teams over 5 years.
He was
almost out of the league.
He was essentially out of the league before the Lakers picked him up and they won.
He was toxic. Nobody wanted him. Atlanta had him for a year when Atlanta sucked, and then they got rid of him.
I argued against the Lakers signing him. I sat on this, well, not this very show, a previous show, and said this is a mistake.
That stuff matters too. We're talking about the highest of possible honors here, right? Like the Hall of Fame is an incredible honor, but the Hall of Fame takes into account NBA and college and Olympics and everything, right? So this is a more exclusive club. When you're coming up with the most exclusive of exclusive clubs of NBA greats, isn't it fair to say half this guy's career was incredible and the other half was mostly a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
In which a bunch of shitty teams kept saying, we're good. We're good without you. Didn't want to sign him, or they had him and kicked him to the curb after 1 year. You can't dismiss that and pretend it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
When you're considering the totality of a guy's career, it's not just peak to peak. That was not the exercise.
Yeah.
So that's a different exercise. And actually somebody did that exercise and published a 75 list comparing just all-time great 75th greatest peaks. That's fine. But it matters that Dwight was this, as I say, toxic for half of his career.
Yeah.
It doesn't negate the good half, but it's not irrelevant.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think if you're just to look at the basketball, then Dwight's in. And yet you can't just look at the basketball.
Well, the basketball and the rest of that stuff are intertwined too.
Yeah. Right.
Like, he wasn't effective enough or good enough for them to think it's worth whatever else was going on in the Hawks locker room or the Hornets locker room or the Wizards locker room or the teams that kept cutting him loose.
This is advertiser content brought to you by Frito-Lay.
Hello, I'm Chip Murphy, here to get you ready for the big tournament. Tonight we break down who will be cutting. Cut! What are you two doing?
Sorry, Chip. Prez here got his feathers ruffled when I told him Ruffles has zero chance of winning the title.
And I was letting Dip know that she is not taking into account Ruffles' iconic ridges.
Guys, it's March. We have to start talking about the tournament.
We are. It is the 2023 Frito-Lay Snack It.
We're talking about big-time matchups between Cheetos, Smartfood, Lay's, Sun Chips, and more.
Just head to the Frito-Lay Snack Bracket and vote for your favorite chip, pretzel, or dip for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks.
This sounds great. Keep up the good work.
Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends 4/3/2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
It's also funny because, like you mentioned, and this is how I'm going to segue over to the Lakers and where they currently stand, but like you mentioned Hakeem, you mentioned Alonzo Mourning and that era, that version of Shaq back then, and you know those bigs, Kareem before them. And with that generation of bigs, they recognized they were big. They knew what made them special, what made them great, their versions of themselves that was great. And they just kind of stuck to those things that made them great. And for whatever reason, over the years, bigs have decided, yeah, I could, like DeAndre Ayton is somebody who comes to mind, who and Dwight, the person we were just talking about, where what made Dwight special was elite rim protection, elite rebounding, great feet, great hands defensively. And then on offense, he didn't have two post moves to rub together. Right. And so like, but eventually, like over the course of his career, he convinced himself he did. And he wanted every team that employed him, hey, throw the ball into me and I'm going to go to work in the post. And he didn't want to roll to the basket. He didn't want to be involved in pick and rolls anymore. And it made him a less valuable player. And for whatever reason, over the years, that's become kind of a trend where it's not just enough that somebody is elite at things that make them very valuable. They can convince themselves they have to expand their game in ways that make them less efficient, as, by the way, they're getting paid more money. And so it's like, I'm kind of curious, as somebody who has paid attention to the NBA for longer than, did you note that shift? Is that something that, you know, that you were able to keep in mind? Like what happened there?
Well, it's funny. I'm glad you brought
it
up.
I'm thinking about AD who doesn't want to play the center anymore. And it's like, Anthony, you are more valuable at center. And I just couldn't imagine Hakeem, Kareem, Shaq. No, I'm a small forward now, guys.
I'm glad you brought that up about Dwight, because I hopped past it, and it ties back into what we were just saying. It wasn't just about Dwight being a goofball or a doofus or whatever. The reason he wore out his welcome in Houston and Atlanta, these other places, was very much basketball related. It might've been other things too, but it was basketball related, because he was like, I need to be the center of the offense. I need to be, you know, getting at X number of touches. I need to be posting up, even though he wasn't very good at it. Right. That's a basketball, value. That's a basketball issue. That's not just,
it made him
that's
less
not
valuable.
Just he smiles too much. No, it's Dwight did not understand what made him great or where his limitations were. And his insistence on all these other things is part of what eroded his career.
Yeah.
Like it is basketball related. And I think you're right. I think that, you know, the greats that we talk about, those centers from that kind of that golden era in the 80s and 90s, you know, the Ewings and Mornings and David Robinson, Hakeem Olajuwon, Shaq. Yeah, they knew exactly what would make them great. Did Shaq want to, like, you know, hurl a three now and then? Probably. Yeah.
But he did. But it was more in fun. It was more in jest. Yeah. It was just
And Shaq got the opportunity. He definitely was bringing the ball up the court and playing point center. We saw that a few times. But these guys knew exactly what made them great and what made their teams winners. And that's what they did. And Dwight lost sight of it. And decided he was going to be something that he wasn't. And at a time when the league was actually moving in his direction, more pick and roll, more diving to the basket, more wide open floor where you just have to do your thing in the middle and everybody else is spreading the court for you, which is how his Orlando Magic team got to the finals in the first place. Mm-hmm. At a time when he should have loved playing for Mike D'Antoni. That should have been perfect. And granted, it wasn't just about D'Antoni. It was about Kobe and it was about all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. But we don't need to reflect back on the Sports Illustrated cover of that time. There's all kinds of reasons why that I think that should have worked, but you know, and he should have been great with James Harden for longer than he was, but he wore out that relationship too. Again, those things matter.
Mm-hmm. Has Sports Illustrated reached out to the Lakers to ask if they could redo this going to be fun, but with this version of the Lakers? Like, has that been on the table?
I don't know. That's not my department.
You can cough if true.
I have to think that in some editor meeting at some point going into this season, somebody said, you know, guys, what we could do, you know, and then that person was like promptly like beaten up and kicked out of the room.
Yeah.
Kicked out of the Zoom meeting since nobody actually gets in a room anymore. Not sure if that ever came up. I love the idea of actually reviving it even as a joke.
Yeah.
We have a daily cover now. So SI, we only publish 12 actual physical magazines a year these days, mm-hmm. instead of weekly, but we have a daily cover Monday through Friday through the entire year, which means there are many, many opportunities for fun graphic representations. We probably should in some way, shape or form find a way to draw on that.
Yeah. Given the way that the Lakers season has gone thus far, I would say that there's,
you know, or maybe it would be too late. It may already be too late. I'll pitch it to my editors and see how quickly I get fired or chastised.
I think it was that version of the Lakers went fully defeated in preseason and then started the season 0-5. This version of the Lakers, fully defeated in preseason, could very easily be 0-5. That version of the Lakers fired Mike Brown. This version of the Lakers only gave Frank Vogel the 1-year extension. I'm just, you know, it's right there. If Sports Illustrated wants to, you know, go viral.
I don't really spend any time in like subreddits and other dark corners of the NBA internet, but are Laker fans ready to fire everybody already?
I mean, I get it sometimes in my mentions, you know, with some of the decisions that Vogel makes, playing Russ and Rondo side by side. And
that was
and
curious.
but it's because of Rondo's swag. It's that's, you know, if you ask Frank, that's what's going on there. But I think it's mostly patience. I think there is some, like, this is the most tense the fan base has really been so far, where they're like, those concerns that were raised when the Lakers signed three combo guards and no wings. Those are kind of coming to fruition. The fact that the linchpin of this season is apparently a post-surgery 36-year-old Trevor Ariza makes me a little nervous. And that's actually
The linchpin of the season isn't Talen Horton-Tucker? The untouchable Talen Horton-Tucker?
there's two. Yeah, you know, the guy who has shown flashes, granted, but and is built. The people are saying that he could play wing, and you know, he has arms long enough to, but all right. But I was kind of curious, like from where you are perched and paying attention to the league in its entirety and the way that the season has gone thus far from the Lakers, are you hearing like any kind of grumblings around the league of like, hey, let's look what's going on over there. Look, is that actually necessarily going to work?
There was, you know, this is not a news flash. There was skepticism across the league from the moment that they made the deal for Westbrook anyway, especially when it seemed that they were making that decision as opposed to acquiring Buddy Hield, who would have been a seamless and great fit.
Would have cost
skepticism
less.
About, yeah, that too. Skepticism about Westbrook's fit. It's funny because we, at the time, I think most people in the league, myself included, more focused on how Westbrook did or did not fit as opposed to, oh my God, they've also just offloaded their entire supporting cast. I mean, that was noted at the time too, but I think there was more concern about Westbrook's presence rather than the absence of those other guys. Mm-hmm. Both of those things are glaring right now, right? Both pieces, both sides of that trade and where it is potentially hurting the Lakers. So I don't think anybody's sitting around going, whoa, didn't see this coming. Westbrook being a tough fit, everybody knew, but I think the optimist view, and I'm sympathetic to this view, I have stated this myself, for all of Westbrook's, you know, faults, and for all of the concerns that I share with others around the league about whether he would fit on a team that is LeBron-centric, give him a little credit. He's an incredible player and a veteran, and he's been around long enough to, like, give him the time to adapt, right?
Yeah.
But we still haven't seen that yet, because the preseason they barely played together, and now LeBron's hurt, so they're still not – like, I don't know where we'll be at game 60 or 70, where the Lakers will be at that time in terms of how the rotation has panned out and how Westbrook has adjusted to maybe having the ball in his hands less, and whether he's found other ways to be effective when the ball's not in his hands, how often Vogel is staggering those guys to give Westbrook plenty of time as primary ball handler. We still don't know. A lot of this is still jury still out stuff. That's what happens when we're five games into the season. And I'm always in camp, don't overreact early in the season. Let everybody else fly off the handle. I'm not ready to declare this experiment a disaster, even though I was certainly one who was very skeptical of the Westbrook acquisition at the time. This has raised, this has only heightened those concerns, I think, but I also, wait until LeBron gets back and this whole team, and certainly even wait for, Ariza is not going to change, the trajectory of the universe, but Ariza being healthy and Talen Horton-Tucker being healthy and Ellington and all these guys, it all matters. Especially when you're relying so much on a very, very top heavy, superstar trio and a very, I think, it's not a thin supporting cast. It's like, it's a bunch of very good players, but nobody who is like a top tier role player for the most part. Like, these guys are all like, you need, like, all the pieces matter, as they said in The Wire, right? All the pieces matter right now, and they don't have several of them, and they overhauled the entire roster. It's a brand new group around LeBron and Anthony Davis. It was always going to take time, even before LeBron got hurt.
Yeah. I entered the season like you, skeptical about all of those things. I also, was kind of surprised at, and I think it's easy to do this with LeBron role players, right? Because you say, hey, if you can't win a championship as a role player alongside LeBron, then like, how good are you as a role player? But like, some of those guys did. KCP did, Caruso did, Kuzma did. And you know, to see the conversation about those guys once they were no longer Lakers from Lakers fans, it really was kind of shocking. Like, guys, those guys were really important when the Lakers won an actual championship. And now you're seeing it. Like, Caruso is one of the more popular Bulls immediately. Had a giant stop against the Knicks the other night or last night, despite the Bulls losing there. And then Kuzma and Harrell and KCP are part of a revamped Washington Wizards team that is winning despite Bradley Beal not playing very well, you know? It hasn't really shocked me. What surprised me was more at the time when it was just kind of like, look, they got Russell Westbrook, but it cost them their whole rotation. But they got Russell Westbrook, and it's like, oh, all right, fine, I'll just shut up now. The other favorite heading into the season was Brooklyn, and I'm just curious again, given how much time I even before I started covering the league, I was very, you know, I loved the NBA and all of that, and I have never seen, and I don't think we'll ever see, another season start the way it has for Brooklyn, where a prohibitive favorite has been derailed potentially by a vaccine mandate and rule changes. Like, have you ever seen that? Like, what's going on? Do you ever sit back and marvel at what's going on in Brooklyn?
Yeah, Bob Cousy didn't have these concerns, I'll tell you that.
Well, he might now, but no, I'm kidding.
As you're saying, like, has this ever happened? I'm like thinking like the entire history of the NBA and all the weird things that have happened and all the different eras being so different. Like, yeah, I'm pretty sure like in the 50s and 60s, this was not an issue. Yeah. No, I mean, listen, if the Nets like just completely crash and burn this season, and it's because of some combination of an officiating crackdown on offensive, you know, moves that were designed solely to bait referees and draw fouls, and a once in a generation or once in a century pandemic and a vaccine refusal. But like, this would be the weirdest. We thought like it was strange when the Lakers of Kobe, Dwight, Powell, and Steve Nash crashed and burned or whatever. Like, this would be an all-timer. I don't even know like how we would describe this one if that's really what. And of course, it's more than those things. But yeah, having your third best player, your third all-star, removed by the strangest of circumstances, not removed by, self-removed.
Yeah.
Opted out, basically. See you guys. You know, we'll get back to you when the laws change or something changes. Like, that's on its own. If the Nets don't win the championship this year, and it is at least partially because of Kyrie Irving basically refusing to get vaccinated, that stands alone in history. Anyway, the Harden thing is tricky. He did have the hamstring last year. He has talked about how his offseason was all about rehab and he couldn't really, you know, do much in terms of his game and everything else. So there's probably some of that. Many have noted that he doesn't seem to be in prime shape. That's been an ongoing issue in his career.
Yeah, that's how I would push back when he says, I wasn't able to work as hard the offseason. You worked hard in prior offseasons? Like, that was a thing that you were doing?
It's, you know, what's really funny is that there's always been this kind of in the abstract Harden and Shaq comparison in terms of they're both really hard to officiate. They create a lot of contact, draw a lot of contact. They go to the foul line, all that. Like, there's these like weird, even though that positionally and everything else, like there's nothing in common, but there's some certain aspects where I've thought it on occasion, there's a parallel there. This is another one. I'm going to get in shape on company time. I'm rehab on company time, work my way in. And also, even in the years that Shaq wasn't rehabbing a toe surgery on company time, Shaq was always playing his way into shape. That was an annual ritual. He like, oh, the Lakers start slow. Well, yeah, because Shaq starts slow. Mm-hmm. Well, James Harden kind of on the Shaq plan, it seems like. So, we'll check in again in a month or so and see where Harden's conditioning is and his game is. Is the NBA crackdown on foul baiting going to hurt him? Sure, it's going to hurt a bunch of guys. Is James Harden an incredibly skilled player who will find other ways to be effective? You know, as a shooter, as a driver, as a passer. Yeah, I think he'll be fine. He's going to lose a few points when you go from 10 free throw attempts per game or whatever it was down to it's three now. It'll go back up. when his yeah. when his physical state gets better, he'll start drawing more fouls again, I'm sure. It can be down from 10 and still be a really good number. Maybe he loses a couple points a game. Maybe he's not scoring 30, 35 points a game. Maybe he's scoring 26, 28. He could still be doing that and averaging close to a triple-double because he's going to dish out a lot of assists. He's going to grab some rebounds. He's going to do other things. I don't think it's just the officiating change that has made James Harden ordinary. So that's going to take some time, as we were talking about with the Lakers. Like both of the cases with these two teams that had all these high expectations, there are some circumstances that just require time to sort out. The fact is, though, the Nets, margin for error, shrunk quite a bit without Kyrie, because it is a top heavy team, not only in talent, but in payroll. Kyrie's taking up $36 million in cap room. That's essentially dead cap. It's right now, it's the same as if the Nets had waived Kyrie Irving and just ate the money. He's dead cap. And I've said this, recently, and I could end up being proven wrong here, but I think it's inevitable that the Nets, if things haven't changed in a couple months, have to figure out whether there's a trade market, even if it's not, even if it's pennies on the dollar, not pennies on the dollar, maybe it's quarters on the dollar. I don't know what the exchange rate should be on a Kyrie Irving at this stage.
I feel like it has to be, like, if you're another team, why would you acquire a guy who clearly, like, he's on a title contender with his best friend in his hometown, and that isn't enough to get him to do what's best for the team? Like, I don't know how a team, unless you're bad and you don't care.
I would worry, right? Like, I would hesitate quite a bit before I went and acquired Kyrie Irving. But the fact is, he can at least play for most other teams without having any of the concerns about the vaccine and it negating your eligibility. So there are plenty of teams that could use Kyrie Irving. He's still an incredible talent. He's just not useful to the Nets under New York's current laws and under the current COVID situation. Mm-hmm. Maybe the law changes. Maybe he decides to get the shot. But if neither of those things appear to be on the horizon, and instead of having $36 million in dead cap, if you could trade Kyrie for three high-caliber role players or two high-caliber role players, if someone's willing to do it, I think you have to seriously consider it, because while they do have some nice depth, they're a little front court heavy. They're a little veteran heavy. Like, they've got an old LaMarcus Aldridge and an old Blake Griffin and an old Paul Millsap. Older, Patty Mills, although, Patty Mills seems fine. But, like, I feel like there isn't enough useful depth there and shot creation there. And so, there's way too much on Durant's shoulders right now. And lest we forget, Durant is still only a couple of years removed from an Achilles, blown Achilles and surgery. So,
yeah, it's fascinating. Those are the two kind of far and away favorites to face off in the finals. And both of them so far this year, I don't know if you could have scripted uglier starts for both teams. The Lakers, LeBron has tweaked an ankle, AD banged a knee. Russ has gone full Russ on both ends of the spectrum so far. They're missing role players. And then in Brooklyn, like we just talked about, and again, like we were laughing before we went live, we thought this year was going to be unpredictable. I knew that there was a bunch of unknown. It was funny to me. I always love reading season previews, not just at a national level, but at a local level. And the people who are like as tapped into any team in the league are those local people, and the number of people who are just throwing their hands up in the air and it's like, yeah, if this and this happens, then maybe we see this. But there's like five ifs, and that was the same for basically every team in the league. And then you throw everything that we've seen so far this season, and it's been insane. So, I'm looking forward to how all of this plays out. I think it's impossible to handicap how all of this is going to play out. And I guess next time when you get your free latte, you and I will be laughing about whatever weird new thing that has just popped up in the league.
There will be something, almost guaranteed. I mean, I will say this before the season started, if anybody had asked, Nets or the field to win the championship, Lakers or the field to win the championship, or Lakers Nets finals or the field with any other combination, I'm taking the field on all of those. And I would have, because while, the Nets clearly had, to me, the best all-star trio prior to Kyrie removing himself. And while the Lakers had obviously some great star power and LeBron and AD alone is always going to tip the scales, there's just too much volatility with both of those teams for me to have felt confident in either of them. And there are enough really, really good teams, not great teams, not historically great teams, not super teams, but enough really, really strong teams in both conferences that I just think it was much more wide open than the Vegas odds or the preseason predictions would suggest. Did I still pick the Nets when push came to shove, when we had to put it on paper for our preview? Yeah. You know, I went Nets over Nuggets. I didn't even go Nets over Lakers because I thought one of the two was going to fall short. And at that time I thought the Lakers were more likely to misfire than the Nets were. But it could end up being Lakers Bucks. It could end up being Nuggets Hawks for all I know.
Yeah. Could be war. Like, yeah, who knows how this is going to play out. The one thing I am hoping for this season is that Kyrie gets traded to like the Magic, because I feel like he's always been Florida man.
He could be united with Jonathan Isaac. Or we get all the anti-vaxxers together.
There you go. Well, thank you very much, Howard, for hopping on the show. That's the perfect place to hop off. I plug away. What all? So you have the crossover pod that you do with Chris Mannix. You have your columns for Sports Illustrated. Is there anything specifically you want us to check out?
Crossover pod Tuesdays and Fridays. Tuesdays with Mannix. Fridays it's me and a guest. And as you mentioned earlier, I've got Tim Cato, the great Mavericks reporter for The Athletic, discussing Jason Kidd and his leadership council. That is up right now.
Yeah.
I have a really fun feature that is coming soon, both in the magazine and online. That I guess I don't want to tip my hand too much on yet, but that's coming soon. So to check that out. Everything is on SI.com. Find me on Twitter at Howard Beck.
Sounds good. Well, thank you very much for hopping on. Can't wait to talk to you soon. And thank you so much for just being as available to the show and everything over the years as you have been.
I'm just doing it for the free lattes, Anthony. This has been a blast. Always, always fun. Thank you. Thanks for having me back. Appreciate it.
That's going to do it for this episode of the Anthony Irwin Show and this week's episodes here on the Silver Screen and Roll podcast feed. I'm Anthony Irwin. This was my show, and we'll talk to you guys next week.